Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 29, 2019. The Kiir administration pays millions of dollars to a U.S.-based lobby firm to improve relations with the Trump administration.
Yeah, but you have a gainful solution. We have a time limit of paying them. I cannot tell you we'll pay them tomorrow after 3 days. It is confidential.
And a top U.S. diplomat in South Sudan says a consensus is needed to either delay or form a new government in South Sudan.
We are telling all parties in the government and opposition and IGAD is that any decision that's taken should be taken by consensus by all the parties in the spirit of political compromise that characterizes the overall peace agreement.
We'll have these stories coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The government of South Sudan will pay close to $4 million to a U.S.-based lobbying firm to repair relations with the United States and delay, ultimately, and block the hybrid court from being formed, among other things. This includes a $1.2 million non-refundable retainer to be paid immediately upon execution of the contract. But the South Sudanese ambassador who signed the agreement says his government has not transferred the money.
The U.S. and South Sudan have been friends for a long time, but when the war broke out, then the relations were sour. But we are still friends, so we need to go back to the same relationship between the two countries.
When asked, Ambassador Boy said the government is in the process of paying the firm. South Sudan has hired the U.S.-based firm Gainful Solutions, run by former U.S. ambassador to Kenya, Michael Renberger, to open communications channels between President Salva Kiir and U.S. President Donald Trump, persuading Trump to reverse current sanctions and block potential sanctions and delay the formation of the hybrid court. That's according to agreement between the two parties made public by the U.S. Department of Justice. Boy confirms the government of South Sudan will pay Gainful Solutions $3.7 million, which includes $1.2 million non-refundable retainer to execute the terms of the agreement.
Yeah, but you have a Gainful solution. We have a time limit of paying them. I cannot tell you we'll pay them tomorrow after 3 days. It is confidential.
Distancing himself from attempts to block the hybrid court, Ambassador Boy, who signed the deal on behalf of South Sudan, said his country initiated contact with Gainful Solutions to, in his words, improve bilateral relations with South Sudan. The amount of money promised to the U.S. lobbying firm, as well as the involvement of the former U.S. ambassador, struck a nerve with social media users. Canadian diplomat Nicholas Gokland, former ambassador to South Sudan, wrote on his Twitter page that the contract involving former U.S. ambassador to, quote, stream the hybrid court is utterly shameful. According to Boy, South Sudan is in the process of transferring the funds to Gainful Solution. The signing of the agreement was witnessed by former ambassador Timothy Towell, as pointed out by the Human Rights Watch, Jonathan Penwell. Penwell criticized Powell for witnessing an agreement meant to, quote, deny justice to rape survivors. Boy says there is no reason for anyone to feel frustrated over the contract.
Frustration from who? What we are doing is to ensure that bilateral relations between the United States and South Sudan is normalized and goes back to the pre-war period. And not only that, our main concern, we want American companies to come and invest in South Sudan.
The agreement, which has been circulated widely online, is authentic, according to Boy. But Boy distanced the government of South Sudan from any intention of delaying or blocking the hybrid court, despite its exact words appearing in the agreement signed by Boy as well as Ambassador Renberger. Boy added, the intention of hiring Gainful Solutions to reverse current sanctions is a move to encourage investors.
What is the meaning of sanctions were imposed because of the conflict? If there is no conflict and South Sudan is in peace, if there is a need for sanctions, if you look at the American unilateral sanctions, were they imposed because the U.S. has an issue with South Sudan, or were they imposed because they were related to conflict? If there is no conflict and we are calling American companies to invest, if there is need for sanctions, individual sanctions, you tell me.
Ranbaga was the U.S. ambassador to the United U.S. ambassador to Kenya in July 2006. That same year, he became senior representative in the Bureau of African Affairs at the U.S. State Department after serving as a special advisor on Sudan from 2002 to 2004, and the African Bureau's principal deputy assistant secretary from 2004 to 2005. Ranbaga also served as the ambassador to Mali for 3 years, starting in 1999. He was the deputy chief of mission in Mogadishu in August 1994. Gainful solution could not be reached immediately for comments. This report was prepared by Ayen Deng Bior. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says any decision to delay the formation of the transitional government of national unity in Juba should be reached by a consensus of all parties who signed the peace agreement. Ambassador Tom Hushek says any move to delay the formation, however, should not affect the period of the peace deal in which South Sudanese are to elect their leaders at the end of the transitional period. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Ambassador Tom Hasek told the journalists in a media briefing this morning in Juba that it is not in the interest of the U.S. government to say whether the unity government should be formed on time or delayed as proposed by the SPLM-IO.
It's not on us to favor one date or another date, but what we are telling all parties in the government and opposition and IGAD is that any decision that's taken should be taken by consensus by all the parties in the spirit of political compromise that characterizes the overall peace agreement.
With just 2 weeks remaining to the end of the 8-month pre-transitional period, little has been achieved in implementing terms of the peace agreement. Security arrangements have not been carried out. The parties have yet to redefine the country's 32 states, and the constitution has yet to be amended to include the revitalized peace agreement. Various parties have blamed a lack of resources for implementing the deal. In a meeting last week, officials of the ceasefire and transitional security arrangements, monitoring and verification mechanism, or CITISAM, cited a lack of resources to canton, train, and unify forces. Ambassador Hasek insists that funding the implementation of the security arrangements is the sole responsibility of the South Sudan government.
The U.S. government simply can't pay the army of South Sudan. This is an army who, you know, has been through 5 years of civil war where most of the victims have been the people of South Sudan. We can't ask our government, just simply our taxpayers, can't pay for that army. We wouldn't be paying, for instance, for upkeep and life support at cantonments.
Hasek says South Sudan must work to improve its relations with the U.S. government, which he says was affected by 5 years of conflict, if the U.S. is going to resume previous funding arrangements with Juba, and emphasized the U.S. remains the biggest donor to South Sudan. He says the U.S. continues to fund humanitarian programs and supports the peace implementation mechanisms in South Sudan by funding the Joint Monitoring Commission as well as the Ceasefire Monitoring Body, CITISAM. Hasek says the U.S. government believes South Sudan has the resources needed to fund implementing the country's security arrangements.
This government, as you know, this country, as you know, is wealthy in terms of natural resources, in particular oil. So there's been a lot of talk about reinvigorating the oil industry here, and the peace process is really tied very closely to that, and that's been very obvious since the Khartoum talks last summer. So there are resources that this government has. We hope that they direct those resources towards building peace and not towards pursuing a conflict.
As for the upcoming World Press Freedom Day on May 3rd, Ambassador Hasek is calling on the media to hold the government and all parties accountable on implementing the peace deal and for the parties to keep their promises of respecting media rights.
I will take this opportunity to remind my friends in the government and opposition of the commitments they have made in signing the revitalized peace agreement. which include political leaders and stakeholders will ensure that the government of national unity is transparent and accountable, and that the government will involve media, civil society, women's organizations, youth, and faith leaders in policy advocacy against corruption and raising public awareness.
Ambassador Hasek says observing press freedom as enshrined in the revitalized peace deal will lead to positive reforms in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The SPLA-IO has changed its position on the training of a VIP protection force, which began last week in Rajaf outside Juba. SPLA-IO spokesman says his group won't send any forces to the training until it's clear that the force will be under one command. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
According to the Revitalized Peace Agreement, the former warring parties were expected to canton, train and unify their forces within the 8-month pre-transitional period, due in part to what the government says is a shortage of funds and failure by the parties to disclose an accurate number of their forces. The warring parties have yet to canton, train and unify their forces. Consequently, the Joint Defense Board, or JDB, which oversees military aspects of the security arrangements, proposed a 700-strong VIP protection force that would be comprised of 350 security personnel from the government and 350 others from the SPLA-IO and South Sudan Opposition Alliance, or SOA. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampo Gabriel says his group still has reservations about the proposed number of forces and who commands the protection force.
According to the agreement, the JDB should be on top of every armed forces. Anybody with a gun is supposed to be under the command of the JDB so that we can work together and we can have command and control of every soldier and every person with a gun. So this is where we have our reservation, and that is why up to today our 350 is not in Rajaf.
But in March, Lam had this to say about carrying out the security arrangements.
We have the political will to make sure we implement the security arrangement. But of course, we know there are some people, some individuals who are benefiting from this war, who are really enjoying the position they are in. And these are the people who are dragging us really behind.
Luruai Kwang, spokesman for the South Sudan People's Defense Force, says he is surprised the SPLA-IO is expressing reservations, yet they agreed on forming the 700 VIP protection force. Colonel Gabriel also says rather than a battalion of 700, the VIP protection force should comprise of a complete division of 10 to 12,000 joint forces. Kwang says the parties have yet to secure the funds necessary to train a larger number of forces.
Coming up with a 10,000 strong force, 10,000 strong force, which is basically a division, is logistically is having some issues in terms of logistics, bearing in mind that we do not have the financial resources required as well as the infrastructure needed for these forces to be cantoned.
Kwang says the SPLA-IO is making a U-turn to the agreements they had already committed to and accused the SPLA-IO of making excuses all along for not abiding by the peace deal.
Our forces have been waiting for their counterparts for a month. Little did we know that these people, our peace partners, did not contribute because of the reservation they are talking about today. All along, they have been telling us is that they have logistical problems getting in their own selection.
Gabriel sees President Salva Kiir's recent call for rebel leader Riek Machar to be in Juba next month to take part in forming the next new government, and Machar's call to extend the pre-transitional period by 6 months is causing tension and concern among citizens, but wants to reassure South Sudanese that the country will not return to war.
People have already seen division of ideas or difference in ideas.
The SPLA-IO is asking the civilians to remain calm because it has got no intention of going back to war. Whether there is going to be extension or there is not going to be an extension, we know I've already supported the idea of the extension based on security reasons.
Gabriel says there's been too much negative propaganda by what he calls enemies of peace. He is urging the Joint Defense Board to come up with a joint statement on the continuation of peacefully implementing the transition security arrangements. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the life of late Alfred Taban Logune, who died over the weekend. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
in a disagreement, do you stand your ground or compromise quickly?
Well, I will try to avoid going so far with that person, not to reach a point of fighting with someone. And I will try to avoid having attitude with that person, because usually people, personality is different.
I cannot compromise quickly if I know that I'm right. So I have to stand on my grounds.
Yeah, I do. I compromise. In disagreement, first time I have to first keep quiet. Then I think about it. Sometimes we also make do wrongs. You may think that you are right, but when you go back and sit and think twice, you may discover that you are the one in the wrong.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese from various walks of life are paying tribute to South Sudanese journalist and politician Alfred Taban Logune, who passed away over the weekend. Journalists who worked with Taban described him as tireless advocate for freedom of expression in Sudan and South Sudan. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
62-year-old Alfred Taban Logune was a former BBC correspondent in Khartoum. He also launched Sudan's first independent newspaper, the Khartoum Monitor, in 2000, which he later renamed the Juba Monitor after South Sudan seceded from the rest of the country in 2011. He was repeatedly detained by the authorities in Khartoum for criticizing the excesses of former President Omar al-Bashir's regime. Taban was arrested and detained in Juba for weeks beginning in July 2016 for asking President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar to step down because, according to him, both leaders failed to implement the August 2015 peace agreement. He was also repeatedly questioned by authorities in Juba shortly after opinion pieces critical of the government ran in the Juba Monitor. Taban joined politics in 2017 to advocate for reforms and good governance. Several South Sudanese commentators on social media described the late Taban as freedom fighter, statesman, liberator, and hero. His uncle, Professor Taban Lo Leong, says the veteran journalist was a freedom fighter who criticized the excesses of the government in Khartoum during the war which led to South Sudan's independence.
He did help in the war, and he did fight the wars in Khartoum. He even saved some journalists and other people who were caught by the system for having pointed out the wrong things done. So I'm glad that Logune had done his share of nation building.
Chaplain Kara Yokuju is the head of development communications at the University of Juba. He describes Taban as a man who spoke for the voiceless about injustice.
I remember him as being a fearless journalist who will tell the truth as it is, regardless of what the consequences are. So ever since he was in Khartoum and even here, and where you're interviewing me in his compound, I used to come here and we take pictures. Even when he was released from prison, you know, I come here sometimes and have a chat with him. So that is the memory that I will live with until the end.
Anna Nimrano, editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor, has worked closely with Taban since the launch of the newspaper. Nimrano says the impact of Alfred Taban on the media in Sudan and South Sudan looms large.
When he left media, I really noticed that it's difficult to get somebody like him. Because when there's if there are other things going wrong in the country, there's no somebody standing firm like Alfred. Even the time when he was chairperson of AMDIS, you know, anything happened to the media house or to journalists, you will see Alfred will come immediately and put it in media or whatever. But now when we compare with the time now, many things happen to journalists. There's nobody coming from like Alfred.
Irina Yah, a media development officer at the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMDIS, narrates what she remembers about the journalist.
My favorite memory was when Alfred was having a meeting with us at AMDIS, and then he challenged us that we were cowards, and he said for him, a journalist cannot be arrested and be taken to jail, and he is just enjoying his time at his home. He rather prefer him to be arrested instead of a journalist.
Rose KG Benjamin, a journalist with the Juba Monitor, says Taban negotiated the release of political prisoners and journalists before accepting an appointment to a committee for national dialogue, healing, peace and reconciliation.
I could also remember Alfred Taban was, when he was called by the president that he should come and join the national dialogue. Then he told the president, I will not join this national dialogue unless if my journalists were released. And then from there, the president immediately released those journalists who were detained. I think one of them is a journalist from Radio Miraya, who was also released as a result of Alfred Taban. Alfred Taban is a very great and veteran journalist that we cannot forget in our life. He is a freedom fighter.
In 2006, Taban won the National Endowment for Democracy Award, during which a U.S. pro-democracy foundation said Taban had been one of the leading non-violent voices of Sudan's dispossessed and marginalized communities, as well as an advocate for national reconciliation, human rights and democracy, end quote. Taban also won the UK House of Commons Press Gallery Speaker Abbott Award for what was described as his bravery in the face of personal risk, including torture, and for his commitment to bring the wider world to horrors of Darfur. A campaign has been launched on social media to raise money to pay for outstanding bills at the hospital where he died in Uganda, and to transport his body back to South Sudan for burial. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
As you just heard from South Sudanese journalists expressing their experiences about the late Alfred Taban Logune, my colleague, VOA's senior managing editor and host of Straight Talk Africa, Shaka Sali, is with me in studio today to share with us some of his experience with the late Alfred Taban Logune. Ndugu Shaka, welcome to Studio 14.
I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to be able to appear on your very respected show.
The late Alfred Taban Logune has impacted the lives of many in South Sudan and beyond. What is your experience with this great man of South Sudan?
He was an incredible man. He was remarkably very courageous. He was the kind of guy that believed when he was doing his thing, when he was covering the civil war, he believed that the shortest distance between two points was a straight line, not a detour like a lot of actual journalists do. He was the kind of guy that, frankly, did his work beyond what you would say the core of duty.
Yeah.
And in fact, we have heard it reflected in some of the comments about him from those others that got to know him well and better, to such an extent that he, in fact, was referred to by some as not simply a journalist, but in fact, a freedom fighter.
And his style of journalism was quite unique, militant in a way. He did not bow down to the powers. Do we still have journalists who stand up to authorities across the continent, people of his caliber?
Taban was a servant of the truth. He was someone that had submitted himself to nothing but the truth. It is very surprising that we're referring to him by his indigenous African name, Logune, which I hardly actually ever heard on air. I always, regarded him as Alfred Taban. And so you are looking really at a combination of Islam. Taban, I thought, was Islam.
Well, Taban is just an Arabic word for I am tired.
Yes, and yeah. And yet
it has no connection with religion.
And yet he was hardly tired almost any time that you met that man. I last remember having an exchange of social amenities with him in Juba, 2015. I had been sent to South Sudan, with other countries by the State Department to conduct a media workshop, actually, during the Press Freedom Week. And we had a very good time. We talked about, his coverage of the Civil War, especially from Khartoum. You remember he was the kind of guy whose voice was booming over the BBC's Focus on Africa and all that kind
right,
of stuff.
Yeah. Right, right. Mm. And, his legacy is unmatched. What would you tell South Sudanese journalists to do in hopes of trying to fit into Logune's shoes?
Well, first of all, I think that we should give him credit for probably having been arguably the most prominent journalist that South Sudan has yet produced. He was a very, very courageous man. He did his job and did his thing under some of the most very, very trying circumstances, especially the manner in which he was reporting about the civil war from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, at that time.
And some people would say he was shouting from the mouth of the lion.
He was indeed, and but he was still able to do his thing. He was the kind of person, I think, that basically believed in sacrifice.
And so let's talk about the passion for journalism. You know, his passion was vivid. His belief in media development, you can see from Khartoum, he came to Juba and continued with the work. What lessons can we learn from the works of this veteran journalist?
I think as we often talk, John Tanza Mabuso, when we compare notes sometimes about our profession or our calling, he's the kind of person, frankly, that regarded journalism not as a job, but as a calling. As a calling, which meant that you really, in order for you to do your job effectively, you had to accept the fact that most of it was about sacrifice, really, for the sake of your audience.
And we will leave it at that. That was my colleague Shaka Saleh, the senior managing editor here at VOA and host of Straight Talk Africa. Thank you for joining us here.
You're most welcome. And if you don't mind, could I please take this opportunity to extend my profound and heartfelt condolences to his family and friends.
Thank you very much for that. And that's the end of our...
May his soul last in eternal peace.
That's the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Get Up, Stand Up by the legendary Bob Marley.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. It's an all that Peter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
We've been listening to Bob Marley with the song Get Up, Stand Up. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours on earth. And now you see the light.